Good morning. It is April 3rd, 2019. You don't think it's recording, huh?
It is.
And this is the Utilities and Environment Committee. And today we're going to talk about ditch maintenance assessment and revisions to the Sylvania Codified Ordinances, Sections 925 and 929. Present committee members, Mary Westfall, Mark Fry, Sandy Hessman, Patrick Richardson. Also joining us is Mayor Stow, Kevin Aller, and Chad, I'm sorry, your last name?
Johnson.
So I think, just for a gentle reminder for the group, one of the things we hope to do is to, at minimum, decide what direction we want to go with the ditch maintenance assessment so that we can have legislation prepared for the next meeting, if we can make that decision and be ready to move that forward. And then if we have some remaining time, we'll look at the revisions to Sylvania Codified Ordinances. Does anybody have a time they absolutely need to walk out of here so we can plan accordingly? I'm thinking 8:30 or 9, depending on the needs of the
committee. I will leave at 8:30.
Okay. Good.
I'm not part of the committee.
Okay. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Kevin and let him kind of guide us through the thought process here.
Okay. I know, first of all, I know a couple of you that have already met him, but Chad here is our GIS technician. He assists us in getting all of our utilities, assets in general, mapped throughout the city. We're able to pull a lot of data off of that information that he does. Any maps that you see that we bring to you as council, that's the guy. Known around here as the map guy. But he really does, what he's enabled us to do is to pull a lot of data very easily off of our assets. Now that we have our water and sewer systems in the GIS, if you ask me how many 8-inch diameter water mains do we have, before we'd have to go through the maps and we'd have to say, okay, we got 200 feet here, we got 200 feet here. He can pull that information up like that. With asset management requirements that are coming up with Ohio EPA, they're already in place on water. They will be in place in sanitary sewer. And ODOT is already talking, if you want grant money from them, you're going to have an asset management plan in place. So it's really becoming more and more critical, and Chad's our go-to guy for this. So I am not a, I am the dinosaur of this office, and so when it comes to being able to switch to different places on maps and stuff, Chad came in early this morning so that to help us through this. So ditch maintenance fee, what we're looking at, this fee is what we use. It provides for the, and this is right out of the ordinance language, provides for the construction, maintenance, repair, cleaning, and enclosing open drainage ditches located within the corporate limits of the city of Sylvania. So that's what the city has always used to be able to, when you see guys weed whacking weeds, or if a tree has fallen and it's obstructing the flow, we get it out of there. We use it for to repair catch basins because that's associated with storm flows. Anything that's really stormwater or ditch related, that's what we use these funds for. Currently that charge, that assessment is 40 cents per front foot of your lot. So if you've got a 100-foot lot, your annual assessment is $40. If you got a 70-foot lot, it's $28. And it's based on front footage. A residential fee, our lots in the city typically range, you know, most lots are 40 to maybe 150 feet. We've got a few that are longer, but typically that's the range that they're at. So if you've got a 40-foot lot, your existing assessment is $16. However, if you have a 40-foot lot, you probably have two, three, or four lots. Even in the older sections of town, many times people ended up purchasing two lots. So even though your house may be, you know, considered to be in a 40-foot lot district, which we don't have much of that. You probably have 80 feet. It's very rare for somebody to only have one 40-foot lot. And if you can imagine a 40-foot, it's pretty tough to get a house, driveway, garage, and all of that. It's pretty tight. So someone that owns only one 40-foot lot is pretty rare. Most of our lots are 70 feet and up. Our R1 rezoning is 70-foot minimum lot width. So most of them are 70 feet and up. The current revenue that we bring in with that assessment is about $280,000. It varies, obviously. If we bring in some Woodland Hills, we'll add to that number. The area that we just assessed will add to that number. So, but it's roughly about $280,000 each year. So what we're proposing, and the problem with that is if you look at the drawing that's on the second page of what I handed to you, the problem with that method of assessment is at the top there is the right in the middle is the CVS site at King and Sylvania, and then at the bottom is it just happens to be a lot that we own, but we could have picked any grass on the lot. But if you take a look, both of those, because they're corner lots, they pay for both frontages. But if you take a look at the frontages, 567 feet, 530 feet, pretty close in distance, and you can see what their assessments are. CVS pays $227, and we pay $212 for that lot. But the CVS lot contributes a lot more stormwater drainage and runoff than what our little pocket park sets off. So it's not really a true representation. The amount of frontage that you have isn't a true representation of what you contribute to the system or the benefit that you receive from the system. So what many communities have done, and it's what we're proposing to do, a lot of other communities have had to establish stormwater utilities in this instance. We're essentially just taking that methodology and we're just going to say that's going to be our ditch maintenance fee. So we're just changing our method of assessment for the ditch maintenance fee. In this basis that we're proposing, property owners would be charged based on the amount of impervious surface or hard surface. And that impervious can mean asphalt, gravel, roof, concrete, anything that water doesn't drain through easily is considered impervious. In doing that, it makes it more of a user fee based on the contribution that the property makes to the stormwater system. And it puts it more in line with other utilities. If you think on the sanitary sewer system, we don't charge sanitary sewer based on how much front footage you have. We charge sanitary sewer based on how much water you've used, which is a fair correlation to how much water you've put into the sanitary sewer system. So it's making it more equivalent to the benefit that you receive and the use of the system. So Chad has taken a look at several residential properties throughout the city, because what we didn't want to do is say, Patrick, you have 2,200 square feet, and Kevin, you have 2,400 square feet, and so it's going to be per square foot. We wanted the residential to be uniform so that, you know, house one will pay the same as house two. And so what we did was take a look and then base everything else off of that. So what Chad did was take a look at several residential areas throughout the city and came up with an average square footage of impervious area that a residential lot has. That number for us, for the city of Sylvania, is about 3,500 square feet. The city of Toledo uses 2,500 square feet for their utility, and Lucas County uses 5,500 square feet. But they, if you think about it, Lucas County has larger lots, farms, and everything like that, where city of Toledo has smaller lots, the postage stamp lots, and so their coverage is a little less. So it kind of makes sense that we're between those two, and that's what it came out to be. What we're proposing at this time, and we're still working on this because we haven't went 100% and had this finished, because we wanted to make sure council was going to be okay with the methodology before I wasted his time and we did the whole city. But from what our preliminary work is showing us, we're showing that fee would be, our proposed fee for the residential would be $24 per equivalent residential unit. So each house is going to pay $24 a year. And on a uniform basis. Now, right now, that varies based on how much front footage you have.
What about the small houses on the 40-foot lots that have two lots? Are you going to charge them just for the one house or for the two lots?
For one, that's one of the things that we're working through on the software.
Okay.
Yeah. If a house is setting on, if it's setting on the two lots, in other words, the house is split in two, between the two lots, then they will only get charged once. If it's an open lot, making it a buildable lot, then they'll be charged for two lots. So it's based on buildability, really.
Well, Kevin, you said your R1 has a limit now of 70 feet. If you've got a 40-foot buildable lot, it's not buildable by our code, right?
Because it's an existing non-conforming lot.
Grandfathered?
Yes.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We wouldn't, if somebody came in with a new development, we wouldn't permit the 40-foot lot.
Right.
But it's an existing non-conforming, so.
Got it.
There is.
Okay.
So. Those are going to be, the open 40-foot lots are going to be pretty minimal. We don't have many of those. Most of the areas that we have with 40-foot lots, the houses are set on two lots. And that's one of the things we're working on. Chad and I talked about it a little more yesterday on how he's going to be able to pull those out. So, and that's part of why this isn't 100% final yet. So that's how the residential properties will be handled. Every house in the city will pay $24 per year.
So it shows up above that the average has traditionally or historically been $28.
Yes.
So I'm sure you're going to explain as we move forward what that does to our revenue. Well, minimal.
Yes.
Lower than the current average.
Yes. It will actually will end up, if we keep it at this $2, and I wanted to keep it something simple. I didn't want it $23.75 or something like that. We're just trying to keep it something simple, $2 a month. We will actually generate a little more revenue. At least it's showing right now that we'll generate a little more. We'll lose some of that once we work through some of these bugs, if you will.
We'll
cover that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's how the residences are going to be handled. Everything else, business, churches, hospitals, schools, anything else you can think of that's non-residential. Apartment complexes, even though they're residential, will be handled differently because obviously they cover much more than 3,500 square feet. So, non-residential properties will be charged based on the number of ERUs, equivalent residential units, of hard surface that they have on their property. So the example I've given here, if a commercial property has 15,000 square feet of hard surface, then it has four times the amount as the residential unit, as the equivalent residential unit. And that's just taking 15,000 divided by 3,500, give you four ERUs. Therefore, the ditch maintenance fee for that establishment is going to be $24 times the four ERUs, or $96 a year. So they'll pay four times, because they have four times the amount of the hard surface as what the residential units have, they'll pay four times the amount that houses have. So $96. We took a look at the some comparisons, and then we're going to run through, Chad's going to run through some of the sites that we've just picked at random throughout the city. If you, the Lucas County stormwater utility fee is $51.72 per year, where we're going to be at 24. And the City of Toledo fee is $44.16, where we're going to be at $24. So we're still pretty low compared to the area directly around us. But based on this, we will generate a few more dollars than what we currently are. So, and I'm not looking, when we started this, I wasn't looking at this to increase the revenue and give us a lot more revenue. It was just a method to assess it in what I believe to be a more fair method for ditch and stormwater. So, couple places that we've looked at. This site here that Chad's got pulled up is basically Chandler's. On your sheet, it's Business C. It's Chandler's right downtown. Their current annual assessment, because they've got so little frontage, 44 feet, is $17.78. But there isn't a single piece of grass or non-hard surface on that property. So with this new method, their annual assessment will be $42. So it looks like they have about, I'll say 5,200 square feet of hard surface, just based on the numbers. So theirs will go up in that amount. The next site that we took a look at is the Fitness Shack, which is on just South Main Street, just north of St. Joe's. And if you take a look at that parcel, again, they have a lot of parking lot, the building, of course, driveway. Their existing assessment is $36 a year. And with this method, it'll go up to $272 per year. And you're going to see a pattern in a lot of these. I will show you one that's kind of an anomaly. But in this method, typically the units that we're looking at, businesses, churches, hospitals, and schools, typically they are the ones that pay more fees because they have parking lots, loading docks, things of that nature.
You know, this is, again, just my lack of knowledge of the ditch maintenance process. Mm-hmm. That particular lot, the last property you showed us, does have a lot of grass around it, around the parking lot. That doesn't impact anything in terms of its contribution to the runoff?
No, because what happens is that parking lot has a catch basin and storm drainage system within it, which is conveyed directly to the storm sewer. Now, a portion of that does flow. One of the things that we'll be talking about in the future, and I can almost guarantee it will come up, is some of the businesses have put in, if they're new enough, they've put in storm retention systems to handle that first flush of water and things like that. And there are credit systems that we can put in place that gives them a 25% credit, or whatever number we pick, but it can give them some credit for that. I have not implemented that into this proposal. I just wanted to take the first step in getting there, but that is something that we could consider for the future. Mm-hmm. The next place is Frickers, right on Monroe Street. Any of you that are familiar with that is all building and parking lot. Again, no soft surface to speak of. Their existing assessment is $82 a year based on the frontage. And because of all of the hard surface that they have, their assessment would go up to $500. If we go just to the rear of this property, there's an open piece of property on River Crossings. It's right across from our maintenance garage. It's all grass. Now someday it will be developed, hopefully, although it is a pretty tough piece to develop because there are some big great changes on it. So
the drainage is just right in the middle.
Right here, yep. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be a pretty tough piece, but that's a piece that actually benefits from this a little bit. Their assessment will actually go from $205 to $24, because every parcel in the city, short of the houses that we've already talked about, maybe may cover two lots, every parcel in the city will pay the flat $24, and so that will go from $205 to the minimum $24. So,
is that privately owned, or is that?
Yes.
That's not city property.
No, okay, that's privately owned.
So. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. One of the systems that tends to get hit a little bit with this type of system are the schools. That's no different here. They've already experienced this because when Lucas County put their system in place, they went from essentially paying nothing because the county didn't have anything in place to paying a substantial bill. I'm actually meeting with Adam Fineski at 9:30 this morning, I think it is, to kind of run through all of his sites and talk about what the impact is going to be. But this is Maplewood School here right beside us. Their bill will go from $288, and they kind of have kind of a high bill anyways because of, as you can see, they've got quite a bit of frontage along all of the streets. So their bill will go from $288 to $873 for this site. Because of all of the parking lots, hard surface that they have. Another site that sees a pretty big increase with the schools is Southview. Again, take a look at all of that hard surface, and that adds up. Their bill will actually go, that's probably site that's going to see the biggest jump for the school system. That and Northview are going to be the two schools that see a jump. But the assessment for that property will go from $328 to $4,601.
It has such a narrow frontage on Sylvania Avenue. That's what some of the schools have. Highland's going to be the same way. Go from very little frontage to, because it's a deep lot and a lot of paving, that's why it's getting hit on it. So.
Yep. With our existing system, they don't pay much for that frontage, but a lot of asphalt and hard surface as you go back into the deeper lot. So, and this is the same thing. If you take a look back here, they've got a lot of grass area, but you know that this area here is all hard surface. So.
So, Kevin, let me ask you a few questions. How many commercial parcels are we talking about here? Do we have enough time to get, you'd send there's like an August deadline or something like that to get this rocking and rolling for next year?
So 650.
Okay.
650 parcels.
So, are we going to have enough time to determine all of this? Or not?
Yeah, we we have a lot of the, we had a lot, or we, Chad has a lot of the impervious area information collected. He figures that, what, you got about 10% left to go?
Yeah, just the large, just the very large parcels. I didn't want to spend the time digitizing if we weren't going to move forward with the process. So I have the Hot Flowers, Lords, the very large parcels. Southie was left until he wanted it on the radar.
Yeah, he initially didn't have it done, but I wanted to see it.
I finished Southie to pull that number.
So, so how do you do the calculations, Chad?
You're literally, you're drawing off the aerial. So you take the 600 parcels, you go on these parcels, and you're literally tracing the parking lot versus the roof versus the grass.
Okay, so in a couple of these lots, and I'm going to play devil's advocate for a minute, because you're going to hear this from somebody, whether you hear it from us or somebody else, so I enjoy doing that, so might as well be me. When you're calculating this, it looks on a couple of these parcels like these lines were drawn to include the right-of-ways. Are the right-of-ways being included in your calculations so that the customer, a la the taxpayer, is getting charged for the streets?
No.
So you're not doing any of that in the public right-of-way?
Correct. I would start at the, we have right-of-way lines.
Yep.
So I would start at the right-of-way and move.
Great.
And go down from there.
So if I'm Southview, and I'm going to make this argument, I say, I understand your point, everybody needs to pay their fair share, but virtually all the water that we have in runoff runs into our grass areas. Why am I paying for that? Because the laws of physics are still the laws of physics. It's not going to run into the storm sewer back here on that back parking lot, because you don't have a storm sewer collection spot back there, most likely.
Actually, there is.
There is?
Yeah.
Okay, so.
And it's retention ponds in the front along Sylvania Avenue.
So there's not going to be an argument by, because I'm just thinking of.
Some places that's a good argument.
Dave White Chevrolet?
Yeah, those arguments will come up. Yeah. They White, that particular site will not. That all goes to a storm sewer.
Kroger's a good site. They dump right into the Ottawa River. They have. Yes. A lot of they have private catch basins, and they have outfalls that go right to the Ottawa.
So then what's Kroger going to pay?
They would still pay. The only areas that wouldn't is if the scenario that you initially presented is that this area flows directly this way. And the reason it doesn't is because
they don't want to flood the ball fields.
Yeah, they don't want to flood the ball fields. But if a site says, I drain right to my grass, Why should I pay for that? That will be a valid argument for them to be able to make an appeal. And then we'll have to consider those appeals on a case-by-case basis.
And the appeals process means they're coming in to fill out a form, and then the administrative staff is looking at it on a case-by-case basis for these 600 and some parcels?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So they're initially going to get billed for every bit of hard surface that they have. But if they come in with that argument, say, no, I don't go, I've got all of this grass area back here, and all this back half of my property goes that way. If we take a look at it, and that's the case, then their assessment would be adjusted to account for that.
So if we implement this, I'm assuming we're going to be notifying all the, everyone of this change, right? Somehow or another.
We will notify everybody of the change, likely through a utility billing, and everybody will get that notice. Anybody whose assessment is greater than $250, and this is a code requirement, anybody whose assessment is greater than $250, we have to mail them a notice of what their assessment is going to be. So they will also receive that.
So when the building owner comes in, because the building owner is the one that's going to get charged on their property taxes, correct?
Correct.
And they have a fixed rental income, and they say, this wasn't part of my rental income, I just got a $1,000 or $1,500 a year increase. What's our response going to be? I can't pass that through for the next 5 years to my person who's renting the property.
Our response is going to be is that we've modified the fee to a user fee, and you're contributing more, and therefore you should be paying more than the other residences. And it's a fee that he's gonna have to figure out how to recoup through the cost of his business.
Okay.
As politely and nicely as I can.
No, I know, but I mean, you're gonna get that question.
Absolutely.
From, particularly from, you know, somebody that has a single piece of property and it, you know, they're renting to one tenant and they've got a fixed rental cost.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Kevin, you're meeting with Dr. Fineski later this morning. You said the bus garage right next to that has zero frontage and yet a whole lot of paving. It comes out on Cougar Lane. You are going to hit it real hard on that one.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the schools are going to see probably 10 grand a year increase?
12.
Yep.
Yep. They're already seeing it in the township schools, like Hillview and Harbor Hills, are their bills already relative to what this bill will be.
They
they're already paying.
Actually, they pay a higher rate in the county?
Right, but they pay a higher rate, but they don't have as much impervious. Hillview and Harbor Hills do not have as much impervious as Southview.
The rate is
higher. I looked at their bill. It's in the thousands. I think Hillview was 2,000 and Harbor Hills was maybe close to 3,000.
Now I've heard that, and I think maybe from talking to you, Kevin, that there's pavement that can be installed. Obviously, this doesn't affect us immediately. That allows for drainage. Is if we're going to provide some sort of an incentive credit mechanism in the future for people to install their own French drains and those types of things, like Kroger apparently has already done when they reconstructed some years ago, is that something that's going to be included in there in your mind?
Yeah, that would be part of a credit system that we would build together.
Okay.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You gotta go back to Kroger. Kroger may drain directly into Ottawa River, but you're still going to charge them, aren't you?
Yeah, they will pay the full fee.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
it's
it goes
because they drain right to a ditch in
right.
fact. Okay.
Yeah, they'll still pay. They'll pay full fee.
Okay.
So now the one thing that we can do is, and it obviously it lessens the impact on the businesses, is to increase the amount that we're charging for the equivalent residential unit. I established it at the $24, trying to stay at or below our existing average. There's nothing to say that we can't make that just to grab, you know, $30. That would be $2.50 a month. That would lessen the impact on the non-residential world. But I was trying to stay at or below that existing average.
If we increased that average, could we apply that to maybe just as an example, just the schools to relieve their contribution?
We wouldn't be able to apply it to a specific group, if you will. It would just be a broad reduction. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kevin. The revenue in 2018 was $280,000. And you said this will bring in a little bit more than that. How does that number, is that cover all the costs involved for us for 2018?
Yes, on a routine year, that is a sufficient amount of funds. Our reserves in that fund are at about $150,000. And if you go according to the financial policy, you know, we should have about a 30% reserve in that. So that would be roughly $90,000 we should have in reserves, and we're at $150,000. There was a year. It was 2014, where we did we did a lot of the storm work back in the subdivision around Highland Meadows school, off of Berry.
Yeah.
And we utilized some of those stormwater funds for some of those fees, and we dipped down to them in that account. But I think it's a healthy amount. is there some additional, we do have a large project coming up, an Eldon Ditch improvement project, where we'll probably have to adjust that fee for a few years. But on a year-to-year basis, that is a fair amount to be bringing in, so.
Okay, does that amount then, it sounds like there's going to be a lot of Chad working on this and an administration of the program and dealing with the people that are going, I don't want to do this, or coming in with complaints and a relook at my property.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to me that that's, that needs to be figured in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, the way we currently have it set up, this revised fee will bring in, if it stays as is, and we don't lose any properties and that kind of, and which we know we're going to lose some because of this housing situation that we talked about. This method will bring in about $309,000. Yes. Now, I would say that we'll probably easily lose probably about $15,000 of that just on adjustments that we know we have to make. So that takes us down to about $295,000. And then, assuming we're going to have a few appeals and things of that nature, we may lose a little bit more. But that's kind of why we've settled on. It's part of why we've settled on this amount as well, is to not affect our existing revenue to a negative degree.
So that would suggest there's a pretty significant gain to the residential community in terms of paying less, mm-hmm. but a bigger hit to our small businesses and our schools mm-hmm. in terms of paying more.
Yeah. If we increase the residential phase, we do have there is a little bit of a risk to where you're hitting the smaller lots with a little bit more of a fee, but it really is gonna be a small, on a proportional basis, it's gonna be minimal. And that would take, you know, even if we raise that to $36 a year, you know, like I said, most 40-foot lot owners, they owe two lots, so they're paying $32 today. If we increase that to 36, you know, not a $4 hit versus a $4,000 hit, you know, and I don't know if we did that, if we raised that to 36, how that would impact the non-residential fees. I'd have to take a look at that.
What does if we say $24 a year, every dollar, what does that look like to the bottom line on the residential side? Do we have those numbers?
No, that's like, what I'd have to take a look at.
How many housing units do we have?
Yeah, we can divide it out, but.
About 6,000 housing units. I calculated over 4,000 units with CS savings.
So every dollar is $6,000.
So,
give or take.
Yeah, so a $10, if we bumped it to 34, we're looking at 60,000 extra that we could use to.
So Kevin, I understand where your thought's going, so because there's going to be costs for Kevin and Chad to allocate some internal costs
sure.
to this particular fund, to the extent that may already be going on, I obviously don't know. You'd indicated that from Patrick's question that we couldn't differentiate for the schools. I'm assuming that's a legality in the code?
Yeah.
So could we is it just commercial and residential, or could we say any public sector entity, you know, gets a discount?
I would have to dig into the code again, because I know that today, we pay for properties that we own, like that park that I showed earlier, we pay the same thing that everybody else pays.
I understand.
So I'd have to take a look at the code.
And I'm not saying a free ride, I'm saying
you
know, some sort of a modification.
I don't recall anything in the code that allows that. It references uniform and consistent and those words. And typically what that means is everybody pays they're the same, based on the same method.
But the reason I'm asking the question is, realistically speaking, we'll use Sylvania Schools as an example because you already talked about the 12 grand. Eventually, we're paying the 12 grand anyways. It's not going to be in the sewer ditch assessment, but we're going to pay the 12 grand anyways. Because although I know that township residents and City of Toledo residents also attend the school district, the City of Sylvania, a good chunk of that 12 grand is going to come out of the taxpayers' pocket regardless. Because it's the same pocket.
As well. Does the money collected off this, does it need to be used for ditch maintenance?
Yeah, it's the only thing. It's just like a water or a sanitary sewer account. It has to be used for those purposes.
Okay.
But that includes, you said, catch basins. So like on my street, where we do not have ditches, but we have catch basins. So that is considered, it's almost a misnomer, right? It's not, I think people will look at it and say, oh, I don't have a ditch. I probably don't pay that.
The enclosing open during these dishes is where the storm sewers come in.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And one of the reasons that I'm continuing to call it a ditch maintenance fee is because if we go the stormwater utility route that Toledo County has, that brings on a whole nother world of regulations and problems. And are they manageable? Yes. But they come with expense. They come with requirements that, as we currently have it, we don't have, and my preference is to keep it that way.
Okay.
It makes it much simpler.
So in other words, there's a reason why Toledo's at $44. They have a storm sewer utility.
Yes.
And ours is, theoretically, if we go this route, is at $24 for a residential customer.
Now, we would probably never get to their $44, but it does come with. A stormwater utility comes with a lot of additional, I don't want to say a lot, it comes with additional requirements and effort that I just assume stay away from.
Kevin, in general, I'm curious about whether, like, Lucas County's numbers and Toledo's numbers are so much higher than ours. So is that been a longstanding position that they've been in, or have they recently gone through a transition like we're talking about right now?
Toledo's has been in place for more than 10 years. It's been there for a long time. It was a requirement when they started. They were actually a phase one community in the EPA world. They were a phase one community, so they got a lot of the regulations and requirements put on them a lot sooner than anybody else in Northwest Ohio. They had no money to do it, so they established a stormwater utility. Theirs started out a lot less. Theirs started out down in the high twos. I think it was like 290 or something. And now they're up in the 370 range. Now over 12 years, that's not a real big increase, but it is what it is. So that's how they've gotten there. The county just established theirs in 2012. So that was a new thing with the county.
And again, like, just trying to figure out the reason that we're looking at this now. Is this a new trend in how people are managing their ditch maintenance or their?
It's more, if you take a look at ditch maintenance fees or stormwater utilities, a lot of the communities that have never had this, they're just going directly to the stormwater utility route, and which makes sense. If I don't have anything in place, I'll go the utility route. Because I have this in place, I assume I'd like to stay there. But it is becoming, I haven't found anybody that has a stormwater utility or a ditch maintenance fee that does it by front footage. Yeah, we are unique in that regard. So, and I think when this has been in existence for a very long time. I didn't go back to take a look at when it started, but I think when it started, it made sense. Even when it got started, the ability to determine impervious area would have been a nightmare. mean, the software just wasn't there to be able to do it. So it made sense when it was established, but in today's world and the abilities we have, I think this method is more fair. And I'm not asking you today really to approve the dollar figures in that, because like I said, we are still working on some of the bugs, but more so that you're okay, or you would say that you would recommend the methodology. And perhaps some input on you'd like to see some different dollar figures or something like that. We can, once we determine, you know, that we know how many houses we have, once we determine all of the impervious area, then we can start playing with, you know, $24, $36, $30, and what does that do this summer?
So essentially what you're looking for is just approval of the process and methodology, not the actual numbers. Let me ask this question, though. Is that enough for legislation? You may have a perspective on this without Leslie here. Can legislation go through on that, and then are you given the path to just move forward? Is that what you're basically hoping for at this point?
What's going to happen with the legislation is the way the legislation works, it's a long process. The first resolution is going to be coming up in May, and that will be the necessity for the approving the necessity of the assessment. There won't be any dollar figures or anything mentioned in that. And then in July, you'll actually approve the assessment and the amounts. So you won't have any dollar figures that have to be approved until July. But there's a lot of work for us to do between now and July. And I just, if it's something that council says, nope, we're not going to do it, I want to stick with the existing method, I didn't want to waste all of that Chad's effort, to get to July and say no. But if the methodology is okay, then we'll get it so that, and probably have another meeting or two of this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do we know how many, because overall we're talking about a slight reduction for the residential, equivalent residential unit. There are some individuals, though, that may see increases. Do we have a sense of how many homes that represents? Is it 5? Is it 1,500? You know, just a proportion, just a general ballpark.
I had 4,000 seen a savings, so it would be around 2,000 that would see an increase, but the amount of increase is you're talking very small. The minimum people were paying, the minimum was $15.
Okay.
And that would go to 24.
Right.
So the increase,
75 cents a month.
The greatest increase is $9. The greatest decrease is about $60, $70. Right now we have people paying upwards to $70. Most our lots are larger. They're not in that 40 feet range. So
I personally, my initial thoughts is that we were going to be at $3 a month or $36 a year. That was my initial thoughts, because I think most of the residences in our city are the larger lots, like Chad talked about, and so the frontages are larger than that. My concern at 36 was the people that do have the smaller lots are typically on the lower side of the income scale. And so if we went to 36, we were hitting them a little harder than
they would go from 15 to 36,
yeah,
potentially.
Yeah. Now, those are very few. It's a very small number, but it hits them, them a lot.
Is there any way to make some sort of an exception if they're below a certain size or anything?
In other words, a small lot residential or a large lot residential.
Right. Two tiers.
That can be done.
It adds a little layer of complication, but if it's just a few, it might.
Well, I'll say from a legal standpoint, it can be done. From a data standpoint,
is your calculation now, Chad, the 3,500 square feet of impervious area, do you consider that to be the average residential lot?
I consider that to be the average impervious area on a residential
lot. That's what I mean.
Yeah, our average residential lot's probably in closer to 10 to 12,000 square feet range as far as the size
of the
commercial.
But the 3,500 square feet.
The 3,500 is the house, the garage, and the driveway.
All right. So the way you've set it up right now is really honest in that 3,500 square feet for a typical residential lot, and you're using 3,500 square feet as your unit for all the commercial lots. So if we change these numbers, you're really going to balance it heavier on residential. If you want to lighten the load on the schools and things, you're actually going to front load it for the residential. Now, I can look at it and say, well, yeah, but the residential lots are typically shallower and they have more street in front of them, so they have more sewer going in front of them. And I can see warping it that way. That's the way the system actually is biased now. However, to go to a two-tier system for the residential might make sense, because then you could change it from 3,500 square feet to something else and help the commercial that way.
We could really almost do that just based on zoning, because R2 is going to be the smaller lots. Yeah, that's something that we can tell you about.
I was just thinking off the top of my head, 18 on the one level and 30 on the other level. So that those individuals who have smaller lots, who probably have less impervious area because their homes typically aren't as significant in the way of impervious surface area.
That sounds hard. Not doing that sounds hard defensible to me. To have somebody to come into the mayor's office and say, hey, I got this little house on this little lot, you're charging me the same as this big lot mm-hmm. in the new residential subdivision. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of political reason to have two tiers.
Yeah, so that we can.
And then as far as the commercial piece, I guess my thought is to make it an average equivalent residential unit. I don't have a problem with the 24 on the top of my head. Yeah. If that's where the average comes out at between the two tiers, so just call it okay. The average between this number and this number is 24, 25, whatever that number is, and then apply that all up the whole way to the commercial side.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
Are you trying the dollar value?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought the mayor's comment was an interesting one, though. If we do a small lot, large lot, which is, kind of one of the first concepts, and then you moved to the next step, which is, do you have a bigger footprint on a larger lot, so you could increase that 3,500 to something a little more, which would take some of the burden away from the businesses, but still benefit. Am I making sense?
Yeah, we'll take a look at that. We'll take a look at, in those smaller lot areas, is the average coverage 2,500 square feet,
right.
And in the larger lot areas, is it actually 4,000 or 4,500?
Yeah, right, and would that
right.
give a little bit of
variance? Yeah, to me, conceptually, the appropriate allocation of cost versus impact conceptually makes sense to me. I mean, that seems reasonable.
Mm-hmm. I think that we definitely are seeing some room for moving in a direction that might bring some more comfort to this group. The question I would ask is there a motion to consider moving forward with the necessity for the assessment at that May meeting? Does the group feel like they're...
You mean in general? Yeah. Well, I think we've been...
I mean, we still have the opportunity in July to say we don't want to go in this direction if we choose to.
That's right.
So what we're really trying to do is get a motion on the floor that says we're willing and we're asking administration to explore further the necessity for the assessment.
Yeah, I'm comfortable with that. I'll make the motion. Yeah.
So Patrick, move.
Also move.
You were being Sandy.
Second.
I'm happy to do it too.
I think that we've come to a good place that says we're a little uncomfortable with the big cost to the small business and the schools. We're trying to find some way to feel balanced a little bit in that. And this two-tiered structure might give us a little bit more comfort,
yep.
Depending on how it works out.
Yep.
Fair?
Yep.
That makes sense.
Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. All right. So thank you for joining us today, Mayor.
No.
So appreciate it.
I just want to say one thing.
Please.
I have a concern.
Wait, I don't think
you did?
I didn't close the vote.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I just realized that.
Close the vote.
So there's been a motion on the floor to move forward with legislation to approve the methodology and necessity for an assessment at the May meeting. Or would it be the next April meeting? Is there a reason we're waiting?
I will have to talk with Sharon.
Okay. And an upcoming meeting.
And an upcoming meeting. Yeah.
And perfect. Then it's been moved by Patrick, seconded by Sandy. All in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. So we will move that forward in the report to our council, and we'll look to Kevin to give us an idea of the exact timing on the legislation. Okay.
Okay. My one thought in addition, and I'm not saying yay or nay, I'm just saying to be considered, would be the churches who are non-profit, basically, mm-hmm. and I don't know if there's other, I'm thinking of the Ability Center, other non-profits, not just churches, mm-hmm. And give them, I'd like to see some consideration on that front as well.
So maybe any public or non-profit entity.
That's, you always say it so well, Mr.
The challenge with that is,
yeah.
I don't know, we need to understand what the impact of that is, because I don't know who's non-profit and non-profit are, there's non-profit and then there's non-profit.
Flower yes. Hospital was non-profit.
That's true. And yeah, so right. is Lord's. So we go on and on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
It's weird. It depends on the churches, because the last two on the list that we didn't get to, both of those are churches.
Oh.
And one you can see goes from 444 to 624, but the other one actually drops because they have so much frontage, but a small parking lot.
Which churches are these? Can you share those?
Yeah, this is Sylvania United.
It's United Methodist?
On
First United Methodist?
No, I think it's...
it's out here on Erie? So or is Erie. It up... Is it, I just don't know if it's the one that's right there by
Vernon
Park,
UCC?
If it's the one
UCC,
that's down.
UCC, yes.
Okay.
Remember, yeah. UCC. So theirs goes up a little bit, $20 a month. But King of Glory, which is on...
Silicon.
Brent.
Brent, right. I'm sorry.
Actually goes down.
Because they've got a large piece of ground. And
they've got a
large
parking lot.
Yeah.
They've got a large frontage. But not much air service. So
okay. Well, thank you. I think this is great, Chad. So nice of you to be here as well. That was really, really helpful to have you here and your input and your expertise.
And I appreciate the notion that the methodology seems to be correct, because what that enables us to do is to get us to the end point, and then we really can start taking a look at the numbers and say, well, what if we do this? Mm-hmm. And we can kind of work on those. Knowing what your concerns are, mm-hmm. we can try to work within those parameters.
And I'm not sure what I heard, I think, was a two-tier for residential lots, possibly small lots, large lots. And the businesses would be in the middle of those two?
Yeah. I'm not sure
why we would want to charge the residents more and the businesses less.
No, I don't think that is what we were saying.
Okay,
because
good.
There's two tiers, and the question is, does the larger, this is what I understood, is the second tier a larger footage than it currently is? So right now, the recommendation is 3,500, but if we go to two tiers, could that become a 4,000 or 4,500? So as you begin to spread that out over the ERUs, you have a yes. bigger footprint, so that brings down the cost to the businesses a little bit.
The multiplier.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Actually, yep. I'm okay with that approach. But my thought process was is to basically the residential dollars, let's say that bucket is 100 grand. I don't know what the bucket is. Let's assume that was 100 grand, and we're spreading it out 6,000 lots, $24 a piece, whatever that number is, mm-hmm. to bifurcate that number into two tiers between mm-hmm. larger lots and smaller lots. Mm-hmm. And the larger lot, so the 100 grand would remain the same. The average would remain the same. The impact on commercials would potentially remain the same, with some potential modifications for some of the things we discussed. So the ERU thing would remain, that number would still be $24, but the bigger lots might pay $30 and the smaller lots might make $20.
Again, I think that what we've just approved was the opportunity for Kevin
yep.
to explore all
that
things and come back with
them. No, there's no question about that.
Another part of the reason that the county has, one is the way their lots are, but another reason that they went with the higher number of 5,500 square feet for their ERU is because it does lessen the impact on the business community.
That's
we can start playing with some of these numbers. Yeah. We want it to be realistic, but it's not an exact science. Mm-hmm. We just need to be, we need to be defendable.
Yeah. Okay. So are we ready to wrap up that portion of the meeting? Okay. So the next section, Chad, you're welcome to stay as we head into the codified ordinances, and if you've got other things you'd like to do, we understand. I do want to get a little feedback from Kevin about if it makes sense to start this discussion with 30 minutes. Can we get far enough along? I don't know how complicated this is. I do think that by 9 o'clock we'll need to wrap up the meeting, so I don't want to start and then have you say, really could have used another half an hour.
Yeah, there's no, you by just receiving it Monday, we probably won't be able to get into it in the email, so I can just give kind of a
high-level overview, and then maybe we could set
another meeting.
And you're okay with that. Is the group okay with that?
That sounds perfect.
Okay. These changes that we've made to the codes are, when the actual legislation comes through, because of how we're required to do it with Conway Green, which is the agency that puts our codified ordinances online and is the legal version, it will look much different because she has to take the existing code, note the changes that were made, and everything else. I didn't do that because we pillaged the existing code. We basically tore it up and started from scratch. I mentioned in the meeting that most of the code hadn't been touched since 1977. And it just, life has changed a lot since 1977. And so this was a major rewrite. About the only thing that stayed the same were a lot of the definitions obviously didn't change. But we even added some of those because there are things now that we have to, that we have to be concerned with EPA and regulatory agencies that we weren't a concern in 1977. So, but other than the definitions, everything, I think every other section in this was touched or modified in some manner. We have it where it's kind of how we are living today. There were some pipe requirements that were actually in our code that just aren't, they're not done today. So we've modified those. There are two sections that obviously you're concerned with everything in our code, but much of this language is things that we're required to do. So we can modify it a little bit, but not a whole lot. But the two sections where we really made some big changes are in 929.10. What we're doing is we're taking our existing, if you look in our existing code, the way we establish our sanitary sewer connection charges takes up 3.5 pages. And a lot of that was a requirement of the EPA grant that we received back in 1977. So, and it had never been changed. And actually it couldn't be changed until 2007. Those requirements were in place for 30 years. But they're no longer in place. There were some requirements back there. A lot of the changes were an industrial customer versus a residential customer. And those differences just aren't applicable in today's world. We have other provisions in here to account for industrial waste if we do have an issue. So it's just not needed. Our method of establishing the charges used to be based on the meter size that an entity requested. But a meter size really doesn't tell you how much water they're using, because inevitably, if you have a business complex, doctor's office, the designer of that building will say, I need a 2-inch meter because he wants to make sure there's not low pressure in that building. When in reality, they only need probably a 1-inch at most. And so the meter size isn't a fair representation on how you establish those charges. The chart that we've put in this section of the code is actually from the EPA regs, from the Ohio Administrative Code, on if a system is, a private system is designed, this is how, what kind of flow you have to account for. So if you've got a private subdivision that you're going to put in a package treatment plant, you need to design that for 400 gallons per day per unit that you put in. Going down to the next line, apartments, you have to design for 120 gallons per bedroom. So what our fee is going to be based on is however many, let's use SOMA as an example. They're going to have 206 units, I believe. I'm going to say they're all two-bedroom apartments. I know they're not. But so that would be 412 bedrooms that's going to have. So we would take 412 times 120. That's the flow that they would pay, that their connection fee would be based on. And then in the line right above where the table starts, they'd pay $2.50 for whatever that number is.
$123,000.
$123,000. That would be their connection charge.
What was the multiplier again on that?
$2.50 per gallon per day.
Mm-hmm. Now, so what does that cover, Kevin? That's $123,000 by SOMO.
That buys them the connection to the sewer. It helps pay for the infrastructure that city's already put in place to be able to serve them, and pay if there's ever any repairs in the future. Pays for it will go towards our wastewater treatment plant debt that we have. Those connection charges are first applied towards new construction and debt.
So there's an allocation methodology that we already internally use. And so we make the connection, but the customer, whoever is building the stuff, apartments, complexes, condos, whatever, they have to, in their construction budget, handle everything beyond that point, correct?
Correct.
So their costs are beyond that $123,000 in the case of SOMA, although yes, presumably that's a, for us in the city, that's a relatively extreme example.
That's a very, very extreme example.
Right. So I'm going to just go to this simple example. Bring it down a notch. I'm just going to go to the single family resident.
Okay.
So we're basically talking $1,000 a year
right,
for a single family.
Right.
Thank you for the $123,000 all of this. So with that, is that, okay, that's good. That's helping us to understand that. And
what do we charge now?
Right now, yes. Right now, our charge for that is $460. So it is a substantial increase. However, 1977, 2018.
Mm-hmm. So somebody that had a septic system where they were annexed into the city and their septic was grandfathered.
Mm-hmm.
Once that septic is no longer operational, they're then required to connect to the sewer system, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. When they do that, we were charging them $460 because we had to for 30 years. We continued that on for another 10 years, and now we're considering the adjustment of that number.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
So,
and we will still be the lowest.
So one of the things that was actually one of my questions, I was deciding whether I wanted to ask it here or ask you after, so I'm glad you brought this up. I'm curious if there's other elements within this legislation that change the dollars of what's been done in the past to a new rate that we're just holding in, and if so, at our next meeting, I wonder if you could just give us a listing of those. Used to be, this is what the new legislation says. Because I don't think it's would be fair to our other council members to not understand that there's some things getting changed in this legislation.
Sure.
It makes sense as you explain it, Kevin, 77 to 2019.
Yeah.
Totally makes sense, but I want to be transparent about those changes in those fees.
Yeah, I have no problem. We did increase just above it in 92908, the permit fee.
Mm-hmm.
We increased, that was $95. And that's basically the inspection fee.
Mm-hmm.
We increased that to $250.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just based on cost
yeah.
of.
Again, I don't think anybody will have huge concerns. It's kind of shocking that there hasn't been an adjustment since 1977. But I just want to be transparent about what those things are.
Yeah.
It would be helpful for me, I can't speak for other members of council, but maybe help for them as well, to know what the price inflator from 1977 the current is.
Yes, that's a good question.
Because if it's 3.5 times, effectively $460 in 1977 is probably more
right.
after adjusting for inflation than $1,000 is today.
Yeah.
And that might be something to be taken into consideration today.
Yeah. We can. I initially had that $1,000 higher, but we don't. We don't get a lot of new taps. You know, we have Woodland Hills, you know, this year. That's, you know, we just don't get a lot of that. So it's not a huge, $1,000 versus $1,200 is, I'm not even gonna see the difference in our budget. So I thought, okay, you know, let's keep it. I still wanna be, as I indicated, we're still lowest between Maumee, Perrysburg, Lucas County. I don't know what Toledo's is. I didn't check theirs, but I did compare us to Maumee, Perrysburg, Lucas County. We're still lowest. I'm comfortable with that. It's not. I'm not looking at this as a revenue generator, but I do think it should be more than $460.
Right.
So.
Well, that's a good point, and we'll be good to figure that piece out. Again, we never want to charge more than we really need to.
Right.
To meet our needs in terms of costs and expenses.
Mm-hmm. And the $250 does cover, you know, basically I use $60 an hour. The average tap takes us about 4 hours, and that's what we base the average on. Sometimes it takes us a whole day, it just depends. But so that's what I base the $250 on. And so I think we're in good position on fees.
Okay.
I pulled a lot of, the last couple pages are the rules and regulations, and those are, I did the same thing that council kind of led us to on the water regulations. I pulled the things that the tappers are more concerned with. I pulled those out of the ordinance and put those into these rules and regulations. So, you know, I just kind of took, based on that, I assumed that council would want the same thing done in of these, and so I did the same thing. So
by tapping, you mean people would tap the water?
Yes. People, the contractors that are actually, you know, making the sewer connections for the homeowner and things like that. So those, if there's something that you think should be in the ordinance, we can always put it back. That's how those came about.
These rules and regs can be adjusted without council approval, correct?
The rules and regs can, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I can do like a little summary. You mentioned about the charges.
Mm-hmm.
If I go through here and say, yeah, you know what, maybe I should make them aware of that.
That would be helpful. That.
Because this is a complete rewrite.
Yeah.
If you go home and you try to compare
exactly
this to
we'll
the
probably
data,
all do.
No, I gave up. I tried it. Red line just ain't working here.
When I took this up to Debbie to make the changes, I said, okay, I said, when you start in, just remember all the times that you love me. I knew
this
I was
not
going to
be today.
This is not going to be fun. You know?
And timing on this, I know you don't feel a sense of urgency, but it would be nice to just keep it moving forward as far as I'm concerned. So I would look to the committee for some feedback. My sense is we should maybe meet again relatively soon, maybe in the next 2 to 3 weeks, so that we should bring this legislation forward sometime in the month of May. Are you all open to that?
Sure.
Does that meet your needs?
Yep.
Okay.
That'd be great.
Could we tentatively set a date for the meeting, and we'll announce it at our next council meeting, and well, we've got a little more flexibility here. Today is April 3rd, and if we would like it to come perhaps the first or second meeting in May, the week of April 29th, I could do the 29th or 30th. The week of April 6th, I could do anything 6th, 7th, or 8th. Does anybody have, and I like the morning times, but I could do end of day if that's better for the committee. Give me a little feedback.
Mornings are good. Just on Tuesdays, I will need to leave it by 8:30. So okay. If you think that, I'm looking up 30th, okay. Either of those are fine for me.
Okay. 29th, all those days you mentioned, Mary, are fine with me.
Okay.
Morning or evening.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty open those days as well.
Yes, if that's fine.
You know, I don't generally love Monday meetings, but I do think we should maybe go with Monday. It takes a little pressure off in terms of trying to get Patrick out on time at 8:30. Are you comfortable with that? That's an early Monday. Early mornings can be challenging. 7:30?
We're talking 29th?
Yeah, okay. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So let's do 29th at 7:30 a.m., and we'll do it here, and I'll share that with our other council members at our next meeting.
And we're going to discuss both topics of that, or is that, are we going to do follow-ups on both the topics?
I don't know if we'll
meeting?
Be ready for the other one, but if we can, that'd be great.
I don't know if we'll be, if I'll be ready.
Should we think about that, though? That's a good point.
I'll take a look. We should have it to a point where, you know, I can maybe talk a little bit to how the numbers seem to be shaking out.
I mean, I'm trying to exact, move to that May 6th. Date if you gives you a little more time to get us there. What do you think?
That would give us, I mean, it gives us another week, yeah. Yep.
And so maybe we do 7:30 on the 6th.
Or before City Council.
Or we could do something before City Council, yeah. That might not be bad. Do like a 6 o'clock?
6,
yeah. Or quarter to 6 right here, maybe. Kevin, I guess I'm looking to you whether what you're thinking.
I would, if we do.
Although we did talk about needing legislation to come up for this, but you don't need it to the second meeting in May. That's what we're waiting for.
We'll need it for the stormwater, but the initial necessity won't address the assessment method. So we can do that.
At the May meeting, at the May 6th meeting anyway.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll be okay on that. So it would just be trying to get that stormwater information as far as we can, and then talk about the codified ordinance system. May 6th would work.
Okay.
And sure. It could be either prior to the meeting or morning out.
My preference is always prior to the meeting.
Okay. Is that good for you?
Five.
Six or 6:30, Mary?
I'd like to do six, because we'll have to be over to the council chambers by 7:30. And I'd like a chance to make sure we can get through as much of this as we can. Quite honestly, I feel like we generally are using this hour and a half. We might do quarter of six, if people are open to that.
Okay.
And that way, of course, by 7:15, we'll have to wrap to get over our meeting.
And we want to do it in this room rather than there because of the setup, or?
I don't know that we have to do it anywhere else, but I do feel.
I don't know that we'll need this for that.
The other thing is, here's the other point that I would say. This was a complicated conversation, and no other council members are present tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And you know they're going to want more detail. And that always is frustrating, right? Because our pattern has not been to just trust that the committee is going to move it forward. So we're going to get into council. We're going to have the other three council members who weren't here challenging all of the decisions.
Okay.
So that would be the only reason to hold something in council chambers, that other council members would probably join us. We might end up in the weeds on this discussion again,
mm-hmm.
unfortunately, but rather there than in the public meeting. So it might be wise to hold it in the chambers.
Okay.
Um,
and I can have I can we can I can have this set up. I we can get this set up over there, and then it's available.
You know, I think that we should, I mean, I, with no disrespect, the council members have every right to be at everything and to understand the detail on this, but I think we...
We've gotten away from the committee focus.
Unfortunately.
Sometimes, yes.
But that lets, council members ask questions if they choose to.
We all want to know.
We all want to know. Well, and that's a good thing.
It is a good thing.
So, let's do 5:45 in the council chambers. Our primary focus will be, just a quick wrap-up on this unless we have questions from other council members. We might need to do a little more detail. And I don't think, I mean, and then hopefully the conversation about the legislation for this. You all right with that? Everybody else, that makes sense? So, is there a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Sandy, seconded by Patrick. Is all in favor, please, is there any further discussion? All in favor, please, in favor by saying aye.
Aye.
This meeting stands adjourned at 8:55. Thank you.